Hey friends, welcome to Motherhood in Hollywood, episode 104. Whoa. My guest today is Carolyn Newman. She is the Vice President for Scripted Programming at Entertainment One, and we are going to talk about streaming content and the rise in demand for female-driven shows. Let's do it.
Come on, Mama.
Grab your popcorn and goobers. It's time for Motherhood in Hollywood with your host, Heather Brooker. This is a crude prude's perspective on being a full-time mom in showbiz. She's not a perfect mom, but she can play one on TV. Hold on to your butts. Here's Heather.
What's up, everybody? This is episode 104. I think I already said that, but we're going to say it again. I'm really excited for this one, you guys. One of the things that's fascinated me the most about the entertainment industry, and honestly, since I started Motherhood in Hollywood, is the decision makers and the decision making process in television shows. Like, who decides what goes on the air, what TV shows get made, and where those ideas come from and where they're found. And learning, kind of going through the steps and like learning more about the process, it kind of led me to the development side of television shows and TV and film even. And there are very powerful people who have positions where their sole job is to seek out unique and creative ideas. I mean, ideally, hopefully they're unique and creative, but their whole goal is to seek out content for development in TV shows. And I have really enjoyed getting to learn more about that side of the television industry and film industry. And my guest today is such a wonderful example of the hustle and the hard work that goes into creating television shows. It's Carolyn Newman. She is the Vice President for Scripted Programming at Entertainment One. She used to work at Amazon in the development area as well for their scripted content. And she's also a mom of two, and she has a wonderful, very relatable perspective on what it's like to be a powerful executive, a high-ranking executive, where you're constantly in meetings, you have, you know, your email box inbox is flooded, and there's a lot of pressure on the line for her job to create a good show and to have a show that, you know, people will watch. And then also try to find time to spend with your family. You know, you ultimately end up just sort of scheduling it in like you would any other part of your life. So this is really interesting for me to hear her perspective on how she manages to balance those two things in her life. But also I love hearing how she talks about her desire to do more female-driven shows. I know there's been a big push lately. A lot of people in the industry are saying, we need more women in front of and behind the camera. And Carolyn is one of those people that helps make those decisions and pushes women's stories to the forefront. And I think you're really going to enjoy what she has to say about how she does that and how those decisions are made. So that's my interview with Carolyn. Really quickly, I want to say thank you to some new followers over on Twitter at Heather Brooker, Real Life Actor, at Right Living, at Tanya Planer, and also at Bryn Madison. Thank you guys so much for finding me on Twitter. If you haven't followed me yet on Instagram, please do that. Motherhood in Hollywood. That's where I post a lot of stuff about what Channing and I are up to. And sometimes Chris. Sometimes I throw him in there too. That's where I post a lot of what's happening in our world. And also Facebook. I've been doing a lot more Facebook Lives. So if you guys want to interact with me there, I'd appreciate it. Take a second to subscribe to Motherhood in Hollywood if you don't already. Click subscribe. You will not regret it. Or maybe you will. I don't know. I don't care. Just do it. Oh my gosh, you guys, I just got really angry. I got really violent. What's happening this week? Oh, the 4th of July is next week, and my mom is coming into town. So this will be a lot of fun. We're going to go to the beach. We're going to try to do some vacation-y stuff. Channing is out of school, so we're going to have a lot of family time, and I'm really looking forward to that. So, I'm also going to a special screening this week of Valerian. I don't know much about it, so I'm really curious to find out. It's sci-fi, I know that, which I'm totally jazzed about. And then down the road, you guys, is Comic-Con. Yes. Is anybody going? Are you guys excited? I'm excited. So that's it. All right. That's it for my mommy monologue. I'm going to now let you guys listen to this amazing interview from Carolyn Newman. And I'd love to hear what you guys have to think about the future of streaming content and also more female-driven shows. Are you Canadian?
I am Canadian.
Nice.
Yeah.
Canadians are taking over the entertainment world.
That's what we try. We're like quieter than, you know, the Russians.
Yeah.
We come in systematically through culture.
You do. Yeah. I want to talk to you a little bit about that. Like, so you got your start in Canada. Was scripted television, developing TV, something you always wanted to do? Or did you sort of find a path here?
I have always been a storyteller since I was really little. I mean, whether it was like coming up with really good lies to tell my mother because I, you know, didn't want to get in trouble, which is always, it's a good basis, you know, for a storyteller. Or like being picked on as a young kid, you know, I was a little bit, I was a bigger kid. And so I would come up with these stories to kind of make myself feel better. But I kind of love telling stories. Like I realized I'm a good storyteller. And so my mother channeled me into storytelling. And I did well in English, obviously, in history. And I got like 90s in those subjects. And so, or A's. And so I guess like my mother knew my strengths and she pushed me into that world. And I really loved it.
So like journalism and that sort of thing was kind of where you started, or was it more writing?
No, I started in journalism. So I wanted to be Christiane Amanpour in the Middle East.
Yeah.
When the Gulf War came out, I think I was 10 or something, but I saw, you know, it's interesting. Strong women to me growing up were Murphy Brown.
Oh my God. I love that you said that.
Murphy Brown. And then I saw her being like this woman who was powerful in her own right.
Yes.
And I was like, I want to be like that.
And she just was like, no holds barred, tell it like it is. And it was on like a major network. So everyone saw it.
And she had a kid, but she didn't have a husband. But I was like, that's cool. And because I was like 10 or 11 or whatever. And I was just like, wow. Like she is powerful and she's a journalist. What does that mean? And then I saw Christiane Amanpour, which reinforced, here was this strong woman, you know,
on the front line.
Mm-hmm. And I asked the question, who else was like that? Not many. So really for me, women were powerful through journalism. That was like in storytelling. And that was like the first, if I think about it, outside of being like, you know, Shira, Princess of Power, which unfortunately I would love to become one day, but I don't see that.
If only
as a good, as like the vocation of choice. I was kind of getting this positive reinforcement of strong women through actually, you know, journalists and what they were doing. And even in, when you go back and you look at some of our strongest women have been journalists.
Yeah.
And telling story and in writing.
You got Barbara Walters.
Yeah.
And like
Gloria Steinem. You know, had her magazine. Mm-hmm. And even going back to like Charlotte Bronte. Mm-hmm. Like, in fact, women have always really, and it's funny enough, we were doing something on Nellie Bly, who was like one of the first undercover female reporters, which is really cool and like somewhat of a very unknown story. Mm-hmm. So what's very exciting is that there's this long lineage of storytellers being really powerful women and women being very powerful storytellers. So that for me is what kind of like throttled me into this entire thing, if I'm actually kind of like deconstructing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I got into the real world of journalism and I realized that a minute 30 or 2 minutes for me wasn't long enough to tell something. And 60 minutes, there's only one 60 minutes. Mm-hmm. So I segued into long form narrative and scripted outside of that. But it always came from this feeling of I want to tell something, a story that makes people feel something.
Did you start by writing your own shows or like how did you start dipping your toe in the water in that way?
Well, from journalism, I went into creating this. It's actually kind of crazy. This is back like in 2000. So before we had really cell phones and there wasn't even a BlackBerry yet.
Right.
I came up with this idea with a friend that it was very nonlinear, that kids, teenagers, and this is pre-YouTube, mm-hmm. Could tell their own stories. And they could do that online, and they could video, and they could upload. And what if you just had a Brand Barker, which was a TV show, but then you could have like radio and online and, you know, all these different other ways of communicating. Right. And you could tie it all together in one kind of system, or, you know, one kind of universe.
Network or world or something. Yeah.
Exactly. And we came up with this idea, and we ended up getting like funding for it.
Oh, wow.
And it went on, and it ended up becoming a TV show on CBC. And cool. Then it never came to be the way that it should have. I also think Canada is not as progressive in some way. Like, that's the amazing thing about America. Yeah. There's a lot of risk taking. Canada, not as much.
Listen, we watched The Odd Squad, and I know that film's in Canada. They're taking some risks on that show.
That is true. That is true. But anyway, so my thing really started from coming up with an innovative idea. And if you ask me, I think two young women who were 20-something in that world, it was very challenging to be taken as seriously. Because for sure, if I had been, you know, I wonder if I had been a man.
If it would have been a different experience.
I wonder. I think that because it was definitely ahead of its time. Mm-hmm. And it was smart. And the idea was that the advertising, people would buy advertising packages. So like games. And that the game would be like Pepsi would bring you like through, you know, would be a game that you would play, and then it would, so it could go throughout all the ecosystem.
Oh, wow.
So it was really like this cool idea for a 20-year-old, you know, so it had a lot of, but it was really hard to get.
To sell it and pitch it.
To get it to the place that it needed to in terms of funding and getting people to be like, wow, that you know, she could be Mark Zuckerberg. Not to say that I am Mark Zuckerberg, because I think that is coding. But
let's just go ahead and say that now. No.
Let's just go ahead and say, but I mean, so anyway, so that segued me into this idea of like, wow, like if I can do that, what else can I do? And wow, and
what else can I create?
Mm-hmm. And so I started doing unscripted, but lifestyle programming just to make ends meet, mm-hmm. Like for HGTV and other things like that. And then I got into, and then I was like, I feel like I want to challenge myself even more on my off time. So I did two shorts that both went into, one was nominated for like the Canadian equivalent of Academy Award, and the other one went around, both were in the Toronto International Film Festival in Palm Springs and what have
That's amazing.
It's really cool. Yeah. And then I was like, hey, I really like this.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe that kind of bolstered you a little bit to go, oh, this is maybe more the direction I want to go in.
It was that. And then I produced a play with Woody Harrelson in Toronto, Matt and Ben. Matt and Ben was another thing. Sorry. This Is Our Youth. That was like another play we did. It was This Is Our Youth. So I produced a play with Woody Harrelson, and it was This Is Our Youth, written by Kenny Lonergan, and Woody directed. And it was with under this banner of like all these young producers who were doing something cool. And I was a part of that. And it was called Mac Ideas. And then I was just like, wow, this is super fun. So I I really put everything I had into scripted, and I ended up getting a job as a manager of development for a production company in Canada. And that kind of set me off on my path.
On your path. That's incredible. And it all started from a desire to tell stories and to create something.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about your time at Amazon.
Sure.
Because Amazon is, to me, sort of kind of came up out of nowhere in terms of like their scripted shows and their content. It was like, what? I can watch shows on Amazon now? What was your role there, and how did you help develop their scripted content?
So I was an executive in development, mm-hmm. In the drama side, and it was really cool because when it first started, there was like 20 people. You know, I was like one of 20, maybe 30, and now it must be like, I don't know, it must be over like 500, 300. I mean, it's huge. It's grown exponentially.
That's crazy.
So we would all just sit in a room, and there'd be like 20 of us in Seattle, you know, live conferencing in, and you'd be like, hey, this feels like it's just a small team. And, you know, I know they had the idea that it would really, really grow, but it was really interesting to start when see it like at such
really
a
grow.
Small place. So my job was essentially to buy projects for development purposes that I thought would be an interesting thing for Amazon and its platform, and then manage that through development, hopefully, and when successfully, to pilot and then to series.
Did I see that you had a part or had a hand in Hand of God?
I did.
I had a small part on that show.
You did.
And I'm very glad that you developed it.
So. Thank you. Thank you. That one was interesting. That one, I was already in existence by the time I came. It just finished its pilot.
Oh, nice.
And I was put on as an executive on it.
Yeah, yeah. I was very excited to be on that show. And I have really been fascinated with how much streaming content has expanded. It seems like there's now so many outlets and so many options that it's too much. Do you find that to be the case? Like, when you're buying up something or looking to develop something, is it like, well, do we need this? Or, you know, are you finding that you're being more picky?
It's really funny. I just go for the story I want to tell.
Mm.
It always resonates with that. I don't even, like, you kind of understand needs, but I think also if you chase too many needs at the same time, you're chasing something that's already ahead of you. Like, if someone's already telling you it, that they need it, you don't have it, you're probably already behind the
game. Already behind.
So you kind of just have to look at it just for voices that really resonate with you. And obviously having some market knowledge is super important. But I just kind of, like, let it get really quiet in my head. And, you know, so something like Handmaid's Tale is amazing.
Amazing.
But if you couldn't chase that. They didn't know. I mean, you just had to kind of, I'm sure those executives realized that there was something really great in that. And
timing is everything, too.
Right. I mean, had Hillary Clinton won.
Yeah.
I think it would have been
a good show and people would have liked it. I don't think it would have been
as emotional
and, like, you know, resonate with quite so many people.
Right. But again, it's just a great story. So that resonates and someone, it really resonated. So for me, I try and find things. And this is why I tell people, it's like, if I don't wake up in the middle of the night wanting to get it done, I'm not the right person for you.
Okay.
And that's always been that. I don't, I have to drive it. It has to, I have to really want it because I think it's so much energy, the odds are so low. Like, the odds of getting something made are almost negligible.
And it's funny because I hear people say that, but I feel like there's so much stuff being made. But then I guess if you're looking at it from the perspective of how much stuff is being pitched and written, then it's like, oh, well, so much didn't get made.
Yeah, you never hear about the things that don't get made.
Right, right.
Right. Exactly. You only hear of it. And there is a lot getting made, but I think, not enough directed towards me.
Yeah.
So as a female viewer, I still find myself really lacking for a substantial narrative that kind of speaks to my interests. So even with all these things getting out there,
right.
I still think there's a huge hole for me. I mean, besides Handmaid's Tale or, you know, a few other things out there that speak to, you know, women that is not necessarily a network driven show.
Right. Here at Entertainment One, you are vice president of development. That's amazing.
Thank you.
How do you find your shows? How do you find something that may pique your interest? And also, do you find that when people find out what you do, they go, hey, I got an idea I want to tell you. Does that happen a lot?
First question being, how do I find stuff? I usually find all my favorite things I find are usually intellectual property, like books.
Like books.
A lot of books.
Short
in
stories.
This particular job. Not exclusively, but like I would say 80%. Or is a book I've read and I just fall in love with it and it stays with me and I start obsessing over it and then I get kind of really nervous. There's this point where I'm like, oh my God, it's going to be taken. And then it's not taken. I'm like, yes, it's not taken. And then I start putting it together and I find producers and I find writers and I find directors or talent.
Oh, I see. So it's like that. So it's not necessarily the traditional pitch session where you have like an established writer or producer that comes into you and pitches.
Well, not here because as the industry changes, I think a lot of places don't really need independent production companies. And, you know, there has to be a very specific reason.
Sure.
And it's not to say that we don't get pitches. We do. But the things that I think are usually, maybe it's a control thing as well.
I
like to find it.
Yeah,
I do. Yeah. But I also like to, I mean, obviously I've heard great things come in our door and I've loved that equally too. I mean, there was something that came in not too long ago and it was these two young writers and they wrote this crazy great script that's like 1930s LA noir, kind of like LA Confidential, but told through a female protagonist's perspective.
Oh, fun.
And I was like, you know, the script just was stellar. So I went after it pretty hard. So it can come from anywhere.
Yeah.
And we got it. But
that's awesome.
It's awesome. Hopefully we can sell it, but it's awesome. It's great. It's really exciting.
We're going to get back to the interview with Carolyn in just a second. But first, I want to tell you guys about NuDew. NuDew is a luxury skincare line. If you have been looking for a chemical-free way to get that youthful glow back and really clean your skin, you have to check out NuDew. Their natural beauty system is a three-step process: cleanse to purify, tone to balance, and moisturize to get that gorgeous glow. And since I'm in Hollywood, you guys know I gotta have the glow. Go right now to motherhoodinhollywood.com, click on the NuDew image, and that will take you right to their website where you can check out their three-step natural beauty system. And make sure you type in the code Hollywood at checkout and you'll get 20% off your order. And that is such a great savings. You guys go right now, motherhoodinhollywood.com, click on the NuDew image, and that will take you right to the NuDew website where you can start creating a new you. Are you seeing more of an uptick in female-led or female-driven shows that are kind of landing in front of you, or content that's kind of coming your way? Or do you still feel like we need to do more?
I think we need to do more. Yeah. I think we need to do a lot more. I don't think, if you look at like how many stories, not so much in broadcast, because I think they do a really, you know, networks do a good, really, really do a good job of servicing female audiences that way, in particular ABC, obviously. Mm-hmm. But that's a specific kind of narrative.
Right.
And I think when you go more into the cable space, I think we can, I mean, where's romantic thrillers? I don't know. Yeah. Where are, you know, I think Catastrophe is a great double hander.
Yeah.
I think Fleabag shows, you know, we're working with Phoebe, but, you know, I think Fleabag shows that you can have a great female complicated protagonist, and you know, so I, it's out there, but I think we can be doing, you know, much more.
Is there anything you've found? What have you found recently? I read that you're working on something with Amy Adams, and that show is going, and is it filming right now, or is it wrapped?
Yeah, no, so that's filming right now. Amy Adams is starring, and speaking of a great female complicated, say female led, it can be absolutely complicated.
Yeah.
You know,
because most women are complicated.
Every person is complicated. Yeah. And those who don't are the most complicated. Yeah. So we have, it's called Sharp Objects. It's Amy Adams is starring in it, and Jean-Marc Vallée is directing, who just did Big Little Lies.
Yeah.
And Gillian Flynn is writing, who wrote the book Sharp Objects, and Marty Noxon is the showrunner. And she has been on Unreal, as mm-hmm. well as, like, I think Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Definitely Unreal. She was the showrunner on Unreal. So it's actually really exciting. It's a lot of women doing, and one fantastic male doing a really interesting piece about, with a female story.
I was reading about that, and I'm actually really looking forward to it. I think it's fascinating to me to see more movie actors, you know, big celebrity, big Hollywood stars doing television, because they find it to be more interesting, and there's more more options for interesting female characters in TV, even though there could still be more than there is in film. Because it's not like you don't see a whole lot of really in-depth characters and, you know, in film lately. It seems like it's all superhero.
Yeah.
And I'm not mad about that. Yeah. I like a good Wonder Woman, you know, Wonder Woman being the exception, you know. But I think film can certainly do more.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, I think about where, you know, unfortunately for a long time, cable was mostly driven by this idea that only men were watching cable TV.
Right, right.
So I think a lot of the programming has been geared towards mostly male viewers. And there is also this idea that women will always watch male programming, but men won't watch female programming, which I still don't. I think it depends. Yeah. But that's, you know, there is that kind of idea out there. I don't know if that's necessarily true. Mm-hmm. I think It just depends on the story. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, so yeah, we haven't really, I think now we're starting to see a little bit of a turn, but in terms of movies, I mean, it's really interesting. Like, I can't remember the last time I woke up and thought, hey, I got to, except for Wonder Woman, mm-hmm. Which I took my sons to,
yeah,
which is really cool. But although their universe is so different than ours, so I kind of try not bring my prejudice to it.
Sure.
But because they just wake up and, you know, they've had Barack Obama was their only idea of a president they ever had. Let's forget about this person. Right now. But you know, Barack Obama is an African-American man who has been their president for almost all of their lives until recently. So their experiences, thank goodness, is of you know, racism or chauvinism is limited because their mom is a hard worker, you know, and is not to say that mothers who stay at home are not hard workers, but just saying that in terms of traditional gender stereotypes, they have a mom who's going to work and they have a dad, you know, every day in an executive job, and their dad is a more flexible job. Mm-hmm. So they, you know, when they watch Wonder Woman, they're just kind of like, okay, you know, great, but it's not, you know, so I, you know, then we have to talk about like, but there's been, this is really exciting, like give context.
Here's why everybody is so excited about this movie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But they don't understand it. So, you know, in a way, it's really interesting that you want to kind of also be like, you're right. You know, keep living in your world.
You're right.
Because, you know, you what you're seeing is hopefully another.
It's hopefully what it will be
step.
Like. Yeah.
It's just a next step. And hopefully we can keep it stepping forward, not backwards. That's exactly the real question in this day and age.
I want to talk to you about your busy schedule and also being a mom. How old are your boys?
9 and 6.
9 and 6. I imagine that because you are working on deals and you're reading and you're having meetings and stuff like that, that it's probably long hours. How do you manage your day-to-day life with your kids, especially when they were younger? Like, what was that like for you?
You know, you have to carve out time. And I'm not very good. You know, you have to really try to protect any time you have with your kids. So for me, when they were really little, my job also didn't, like, my job as it is today is not what it was when they were little. I was a producer, an executive producer, so I was on shows. But in fact, my job had a lot of flexibility because I might be on set for a while, but then when I was at home, I could kind of pick up from school. Like, it had a little bit more of hyper intensity, so it was really, really high levels, and then quieter levels, depending if you're not in production.
Yeah,
it's just more development, and you can play more with your day. So that one had a lot more flexibility. But it was when I came here for Amazon, that was when it really started to pick up in terms of like, how do I really juggle this, like it being a true executive with those kinds of hours. And it's challenging. I mean, you can't do every dinner, you can't do every breakfast. And it's funny, I was just talking to my assistant today, and I was like, and we were looking at my week, and I was like, I can't have like 3 6:30 drinks this week because I'm going to London next week. Yeah. So I have to be home by 6:00
at some point. Yeah,
I have to, and I can't, you know, so we had to like redo the schedule because it is that balance. And I get it a lot from my kids. They are not happy that I can't pick them up from school.
And how do you feel about that?
Conflicted.
Yeah.
It's hard because you don't want them to think that you don't matter. So you just really work hard on the weekends. Like, I don't have much of a social life. Mm-hmm. I'm literally either working or going out for work purposes or I'm, you know, with them. And I've learned, I have, like, during the weekends, I put away my phone. I literally will put it in like a different room and I won't take it out.
Is that hard?
Yeah. But I have to be present. And the minute I start, going on a device, I'm not present. And so I just really have had to like force it away. And you know, from myself, I have to divorce myself from it. And if I'm with my husband, I know someone can always reach him if it's an emergency. And there's nothing I think I'm doing that is so important that for 6 hours, I cannot be reached. I'm not a heart surgeon.
Yeah. There is that sort of feeling in Hollywood and in entertainment where I would imagine at your level too, like, you have to be by your phone, you have to be returning emails, you have to be working on your deals and that sort of thing. But you also, like you said, want to be present with your family. And I can see how that would be conflicting and challenging. What kinds of day-to-day things do you find have been the most helpful to you? Do you have a nanny? Do you have a helper? Do you schedule, like you said, like just family time?
Yeah. I mean, we have a nanny. Mm-hmm. Although we're getting a new nanny, but we have a nanny. We have someone who usually helps us mm-hmm. and, you know, will help with, you know, the buying of groceries and it's just about being organized.
Yeah.
So that, you know, we make a list and then give money and then someone's buying groceries. Someone's going to help, you know, she'll help make dinners available so that when I walk in the door, it's not like I have to go do that. I can just be like doing homework or being present or right. doing something fun.
Right.
Which, so that's like a management system, certainly. And then in terms of just making time, I try my best to make sure I'm there for their school functions. Like that goes without saying, and I mm-hmm. plan it in, you know, and in advance, but sometimes I'm not. I mean, I had to go to Texas for the ATX conference because I was speaking and I missed the last day of school. And, you know, so my husband was there. Someone's mm-hmm. there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, it's a juggling act. Could I have said no? Maybe. But like, it was important to me. So it is kind of like, then I got home. But the difference is like everyone stayed at ATX till Sunday, even if they weren't speaking.
Right.
And I got a plane and I was on I was up and out and on a plane by 9 a.m. and back home by 9:30 a.m. because of the time change.
Right.
So
right.
like they didn't have a weekend without me. So yeah. it's not. So you're, you know, that's how I work. You yeah. know, it's like as soon as I'm done and I'm getting home.
I'm so impressed with that. Like it's just, I can't imagine that kind of stress and the like serious power juggling that you have to do. And I also know that it would probably be very hard to miss stuff, but that desire to want to succeed in your career is so strong that it's like, that's, you know, that's the struggle with working moms. You want to do well in your job and you have to pay the bills and you know, all that stuff, but you also want to spend time with your family.
Yeah. You have to really like make time. And so, you know, one thing about E1 that they've been great about is that, you know, they always like, I think at a certain point, they realize that an executive at a certain level, hopefully, that I'm pretty much a self-starter. Mm-hmm. So it's not like I need to be followed up on. I get things done, but sometimes in my own hours.
Right.
So if I leave at whatever time, if I want to get home for 6 and I leave at 5 or 5:30 or whatever, mm-hmm. Which would be considered early, it doesn't mean I'm not going to be working again once they go to bed at 9.
Right.
It's just about being there and being present when you're there. So that's something I've had to work on and I think I'm finally getting better at it.
Do you do social media or do you kind of avoid the social media?
I do because the funny thing is I do.
Like one more thing on your plate.
Right. Well, my social media is more like Instagram and but it also is a connection to yeah. my friends
yeah.
who I don't see,
yeah.
you know, especially coming from Canada. So I can still Facebook, which is much bigger in Canada, oddly enough. And like,
oh, that's interesting.
It's interesting. Like yeah. Facebook, everyone uses Facebook in Canada and not so much Instagram.
Oh, but here everyone does Instagram.
So you yeah. kind of have to look back and forth. But my connection to my friends is like, you know, to see what they're doing when we can't, you know, when it's hard to get a phone call in is through Facebook.
Yeah.
So I can't, you know, which is important. So I just, you know, if they're watching, so if the kids are watching TV and just sitting there, sometimes I'll be either reading scripts or I do use my time wisely, but every time, like there's no time, like it's actually really funny. I feel guilty for even watching CNN.
What? No.
Well, because it's like, is it constructive?
Oh yeah. You're like, what can I glean from this?
I'm like, what am I? And it's like such a time suck.
It is.
So like, yeah. especially right now you can get so lost in it.
Yes.
So I kind of like had to have like watching CNN ban because in my head, because I'm like, it's just not constructive. Like
well,
I cannot,
have...
I am not the FBI.
That's true.
Like even though I think I'm going to watch
something. Did you watch the Comey testimonies?
Yeah. I'm like, yeah. I mean, I couldn't help myself being a journalist too. I mean, that's also part of it. You're watching that going.
Sure. Yeah.
I'm like, gosh, but the quite interesting, I mean, I know we're doing like totally off subject, mm-hmm. is that no one's asked one question, which I find really interesting, which is why did the Russians want to help Trump?
Yeah.
No one's, why?
What could they gain from it?
What was the gain in helping him
mm-hmm.
And so aggressively?
Yeah.
Rather than just throw it all up in the air? Like, right. And but why only one party? Why only, like, why? And I haven't heard a lot. I mean, I keep listening for it.
Yeah, yeah.
But no one's asked that, like, I haven't heard a lot of that very specific question being asked.
I feel like there are journalists right now who are probably working on that very question, but they don't have enough solid information yet to come out. Because I think there's some pretty smart journalists out there and reporters for sure. who are digging. And before they come out with any accusations or any claims, they probably want to make sure they got all their ducks in a row. Because I feel like people don't want him to be able to weasel
but
here's, out of it.
But even during the testimony with James Comey,
yeah.
You could ask. He may not have answered.
Mm-hmm.
But it could have been asked. It was said, did the Russians interfere? Yes. Why would they? But no one asked the question.
No one asked why.
Why?
Yeah.
And what would they have to gain by putting Trump over Hillary?
Yeah.
And then he could say, I have to, because this is confidential. Mm-hmm. But like, even just to ask the question.
Yeah.
Like, it just feels like it's the question. It's the elephant in the room question. Maybe but no one's they, just asking it.
Maybe they feel like only the Russians can answer that, you know?
Oh, come on.
I know.
Or maybe that's true, but I think it's like, yeah. but these are smart people. Mm-hmm. These are, I mean, I'm sure he could have his, a theory. Someone could have a theory. It's just interesting.
So I feel like this is one of those subjects that probably keeps you up at night that you think about. Are you developing any sort of political show that you can talk about?
We have,
has this bled over into your work at all?
Not overly funny enough. Well, it has in a bigger sense that like I'm even more driven than ever to do female narrative that is complicated. Mm-hmm. But that's just more of like, you know, they essentially the man in chief of America, the president of America, you know, is a groper, you know. And like thinks it's okay to abuse women.
Yeah.
And like he is the authority is a very weird, you know, thing. I was watching The Accused the other night.
Oh.
And I was thinking.
The Jodie Foster movie?
Yeah. And I was thinking, and then it made me start looking at like statistics on rape.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if it had gone up this year. And America has like one of the large, and again, it's reported. So I'm sure there's like many countries out there that don't report.
That don't report, yeah.
But like comparatively between Canada and the US, and even if you took away just how many more people are in America, it's like astronomically higher.
Yeah.
Astronomically.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is why.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Yes. So yes,
there
it's bleeding.
May be something there. There may be a nugget there.
Yeah. So I'm definitely, you know, and his election made me kind of definitely think more about that area and what it means and how women are, the power struggle between women and men, not only in the workplace, obviously, but within like domestic situations, within physical situations, you know, how we're still battling it out. So yeah, it's definitely something I'm thinking about. It's not necessarily political, like I have a political show, although I do have one, but it's not, you know, it's not necessarily Trump-ish. It's just more, but it kind of looks at a time and place in American politics where what does good mean? So that's something we're working on. What does it mean to do good?
Yeah. Oh, that'll be interesting.
It'll be interesting.
I don't know when you rest or find time, any sort of downtime, but I hope that you do get vacation time at some point. You sound like you are so busy, but in such a good way, because what I love to hear is that you're passionate about your work and, what you're doing is so great. And also finding the time to balance it with motherhood. So that's amazing.
Thank you.
Thank you for taking the time to talk with me. I appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for having me.
All right, everybody. I am going to put up a ton of information about Carolyn and about Entertainment One on motherhoodinhollywood.com. That's it for me. Have an amazing week. And remember, I'm not a perfect mom, but I can play one on TV. Bye.
Mama funny.
Balls.